We're back in on Canuck Central. We are for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. Canucks playoff coverage brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.ca. Now joining us, a former NHL goaltender, Canucks longtime color analyst, and also a Michelin recommended chef. It is John Garrett. What's happening, Cheech?
I like that. Michelin recommended chef. Hey, you know what a Blue Jay fan I am.
Yeah.
And so Tuesday now, because it's Loony Dog Tuesdays all the time for the Jays, I always have hot dogs on Tuesdays now. There's the Michelin chef.
What's going on the hot dog? For ketchup for sure. Is it just ketchup, or is there multiple things?
Ketchup, mustard, mayonnaise, and naturally cheese.
Okay.
Oh yeah, of course. Always has to be cheese.
Yeah, nothing healthy. No, you know, sauerkraut or anything like that that might be construed as healthy.
It's John Garrett joining us, the legendary John Garrett. So Canucks through two games of this series with the Nashville Predators. It's a split of the two. What have you thought of the series so far?
Well, it's been really close. I thought the first game, the Canucks were very tentative, and Thatcher made that save in the first 2.5 minutes of the game, and I think it kind of calmed the team down, gave them some confidence so that they felt they could come back even in the third period. And Thatcher kept it close enough so that they could. The second game, I thought the Canucks were by far the better team, but their power play has to get better. They really missed Tyler Myers in that second game, too. I don't know how people could speculate that he was a healthy scratch. I was reading on Twitter that when he wasn't playing, that people thought, well, okay, Rick Tocchet, there's no way. Because in game one, he and Nikita Zadorov were very effective. And you look at Zadorov's game one and then compare it to his game two, mm-hmm. and you could see the difference not having Tyler Myers out there with him. But you have to get shots through. You can't have 33 shots blocked and then 33 missed. And people say, well, okay, you miss on purpose. But you change the angles, too.
Yeah.
You don't just pound away, and especially on the power play, teams at this time of year are so scouted and so prepared that you throw it over and you tee it up for that one-time power play shot, and it gets blocked. And the Predators give them great credit, and Rick Tocchet talking about it today, their will to defend was higher than the Canucks' will to score. And I think, sure, the Canucks wanted to score, but they didn't go about it very intelligently. I thought that they were just pounding away and, okay, we got to go, we got to get one, we got to go. And instead of hanging on a little bit and make that little extra play, change the angle and get the shot through. And I think that's something that they're going to have to do in game three.
Well, one thing Talk had mentioned today from Nashville was if those guys are going to get in the way, then bomb away. You know, they've been throwing a lot of kind of snapshots that are trying to get through stuff that's not, you know, super hard. They're not felling guys. And Talk's message was if they're going to get in the way, then make it hurt more.
They bomb away. I thought they bombed away enough. You're not going to shoot it through guys now. And the equipment is so much better. Okay, you're going to hurt the guy if you hit him in the ankles or in the arms or something, but I don't know about the bombing away strategy.
It is, you know, we heard Tocchet talk a lot about how Nashville is fronting them in the defensive zone and taking away some of the high tips and the things that the Canucks did during the course of the season. It just feels like creating more angles, maybe moving the puck faster in the offensive zone. Like that's the key here for the Canucks, isn't it?
I think so. And you know, you have to beat guys one-on-one.
Yeah,
if you get fronted in the corner, and you look at Philip Forsberg's goal, it's okay. He was kind of trapped in the corner, and then he gets Noah Juleson to spin the wrong way, and he makes a good move out front. And I think that's the Canucks have been not as creative as they were. If you look at game one, and I thought Lindholm had a great game, and he wasn't as effective in game two. But teams adjust, and so the Canucks have to adjust for game three.
And, you know, the player that's been criticized the most so far through the playoffs and even towards the end of the season has been the guy signing the big contract extension in Elias Pettersson. What are you seeing in his game? Do you think he's close, or do you think his struggles are, you know, might continue for a while here still?
Well, I really think that his confidence is kind of fragile right now, and shots that should go in don't for him. That one that he hit the side of the net.
Yeah.
And it's just execution, and you say, well, it should come naturally to him, and it has come naturally to him. But when that happens, you can't let it get to you, and then the next time you're looking skyward again, and instead of feeling like you're going to score, he feels like he's going to either get the shot blocked or missed, and then he tries to do a little too much instead of shooting himself. And he should be the shooter. He is a great playmaker. There's no doubt about that. But throwing aerial passes, and when you have a chance to shoot and you have a chance to get the shot through, take the shot. And I think that's one of the things right now. Elias is hesitating, and he's thinking, well, okay, they're on me, and I'm going to have to make a play instead of just, well, okay, beat somebody yourself and then take the shot.
It feels a little bit similar to when he signed his second contract, and he missed all of training camp, and then he shows up for the last game, I think, of preseason, and gets off to a horrible start, really slow start to that season. It was a conversation we had for months after he had signed that second contract. It's just the confidence getting him again. But
And didn't he have an injury there too? That wasn't there a wrist or something that he came back?
Yeah, he did have an injury.
Yeah, there was. I don't think there's an injury. And the Sisson's goal is, to me, is an example of he's frustrated. He's not getting. He's drawn a couple of penalties.
Yeah,
but he's trying to draw more. And it's the playoffs. The referees aren't going to call the same as they do in the regular season. And he got knocked down at the blue line on the Sisson's goal, and he was hoping for a call. I think he was. And then he has to get up, scramble coming back, and he doesn't get the stick. And I think he might have ended up putting the puck in the net himself.
Yeah.
And it was one of those that had he just stayed on his feet at the blue line, then he would have had position on Sisson's, and the play wouldn't have happened. But it's a confidence thing, and you can tell. And after the game, saying that he blames himself, the first goal, I didn't like Casey DeSmith on it.
Yeah.
But it started with Quinn falling down in the one corner, going around the boards, and then Elias kind of spinning away from just going to the boards and freezing the puck or throwing it back the other way, letting it go, and that started the chance, and then Casey overplayed it. But I didn't mind the way Casey played. I thought he was okay. And your team goes, they're 0-for-6 in the series so far on the power play, and they had back-to-back power plays in the first period and didn't really, I don't think they had a shot on goal in those first two power plays. Didn't get any through.
Yeah.
And do you blame the goalie for overplaying the first goal? And it wasn't a great goal, but you're supposed to win 1-0 every night? No.
Yeah, exactly. I do want to get to Casey DeSmith and the whole goaltending situation, but one last thing on Pettersson for me as well. It's his line mates, Nils Höglander, Sam Lafferty, Ilya Mikheyev. It's kind of a revolving door on the right side of Elias Pettersson. And we've seen Rick Tocchet sort of move him through the lineup as kind of a rover. They've put him with Miller and Besser at times, put him in this spot, put him in different spots, because he's just, you're not getting enough out of Höglander and Mikheyev to support Pettersson. And I think that's part of the conversation too here with number 40.
Oh, I think it is too. And you look at his ice time, and people say, well, look at his ice time. He's still around 19, 20 minutes. But what was it last game? 6:30 was on the power play?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you feel, and this is me just watching the games, that at times, especially game one, it looked like Elias was a third line center?
Yep.
And well, if you want to be, if you consider yourself one of the star players and you're relegated to that role, and you're never going to complain about who you're playing with, but all of a sudden you're a third line center, and I don't think that the star players really appreciate that.
No, and I do think, you know, to reach his point, as much as it is on Pedersen, they need to have guys that can forecheck well up front as well. And I think, you know, as much as they did that a lot better in game two, there are certainly things they can still improve on. And as far as how the defense has looked too, what do you think of the way Quinn Hughes played in game two, and ultimately how much better he can still be as well?
Yeah, I think as the game went on, Quinn is such a competitor, and he takes such responsibility to be the leader on the team. And I think JT Miller was a little bit guilty of that in game two also. How many times did he try and go one on two or one on three on the rush, especially five on five, instead of just continue to play your same game? And I think Quinn was pressing, especially in the second and third period of game two, just trying to do too much. And it affected his game. He was trying to beat too many guys, and it's night after night you're playing the same team. So Nashville is getting used to playing against Quinn. It's hard to cover him, but you see him play every other night. Then you adjust your defensive posture and make sure that he doesn't spin to the inside, and make sure that he doesn't have the give and goes where he's getting it back. But if I'm one of the Canucks, I'm trying to give it to Quinn every time I got the puck.
Yeah, it's the best players got to be your best players, right? It's the old cliche, and the Canucks could use a little bit more out of all their top guys moving forward in this series. So you mentioned Casey DeSmith. The first goal, he even admitted it after the game. He just kind of overplayed it a little bit, and then he lost his edge when he was trying to cut back after the shot got tipped and just didn't work out for him. But a tough spot for a backup goalie to be in. I still think the Canucks can win this series with Casey DeSmith. He's been pretty good all season long. I mean, he's not going to give you what Thatcher gave you, but the team showed that they can defend pretty well no matter who's in goal.
Well, and I really think that he probably was nervous. He hasn't played a whole lot of playoff games. But he's a veteran guy. He's been around. And so I think especially now he's playing on the road, not quite as much pressure. I think he'll be fine. I don't think it's going to be the goaltending. I think this team has lived and died. Look at their start of the season and look at their streak when they were really hot. They were just outscoring. Any problems they had, they'd be able to outscore them. And that's what they're going to have to score some goals. And as you said, the Brock Besser is going to have to get some goals, and JT Miller, and they're going to have to have their top players, and Elias, naturally, and get the power play going. You can't have teams defending and go four straight minutes like they did in the first period and not get a shot through.
You know, I know because they lost game two, and there's so many other big storylines, we've kind of gone through all of them so far, but I think one thing that's being lost a little bit is how effective the PK's been. They gave up that one goal, of course, early in game one, but since then, they've done a really good job, and it seemed like every PK got better and better after game one, and even last game against Nashville, they barely got set up in the offensive zone. Do you think that they've figured something out there on the PK in recent days here?
Yeah, I think so. They've been really good on face-offs. And that's such a big part of penalty killing is winning that initial draw. The Canucks have been really good in that. The only thing, and I think it flatters the penalty killing a little bit, is you look at Nashville's last two power plays in the last game. And they had the 3-1 lead, and they were just killing the clock. It wasn't, you get credit for the penalty kill, but you watch the game, sat down, and was there a whole lot of pressure from the PK power or from the Nashville power play? No, they were just, okay, we got 5 minutes left in this game, and we're going to eat up 2 minutes here. We'll throw it around the outside. We don't have to throw it to the middle. We don't have to make any passes to the middle. We'll just kill the time. And that's what it looked like to me. That was the Predators were just, okay, they were quite happy just to eat the clock.
Yeah, and they were definitely playing keep away in that final power play at the end of the game. It's man, the crowd here in Vancouver's been unreal. I mean, you've experienced it as a goalie playing in the playoffs for the Canucks, and it's I mean, seeing the return of the playoffs at Rogers Arena, it was, you could almost feel like a release of stress from Canucks fans over the past decade, Cheech, of just all the things that hadn't been going well, sort of appreciating that the team has finally gotten back to, you know, a competitive hockey.
Well, that's it. And expectations so high. They played really well all season long, the last month and a half, but they still won the Pacific Division. So, I mean, the expectations are high. The fans haven't had live playoffs, as you say, in a decade. And it is exciting. It was exciting. It'll be exciting for Game 5. I think the fans have deserved it. They've been loyal through all the ups and downs of the last, 10 years, since the Sedins and 2011. They've been so loyal and so passionate about the Canucks that it would be nice if they go on a run.
Now, Cheech, before I let you go, there was obviously some sad news in the world of hockey today. Legendary broadcaster Bob Cole passed away at the age of 90. I mean, I know we all grew up watching Bob and his call, of course. We'll always remember some incredible moments. What kind of went through your mind today when you heard the news?
I was saddened, naturally. Coley and I worked together a number of times, and we did a few series together. We became very good friends. He was a real unique individual. And if you ever met him, you came away with the impression that his passion for the game was just unequaled. I've worked with 41 different play-by-play guys, and he's one of those play-by-play guys that you could turn away from the TV and just listen to his voice and know exactly what was happening. You'd know if there was a good scoring chance. You'd know if there was a big hit, just from the inflection and his voice and his cadence. And he was so good that way. And it's sad that Coley has passed away, but he had 90 good years, and he did what he loved for a large, large part of that.
Cheech, we always, well said, and we always appreciate the time, and hopefully we'll be talking again over the course of the playoffs.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, right?
In the next round.
Thanks for this, Cheech.
Okay, talk to you later.
There he is, John Garrett.
Yeah, always fun catching up with Cheech. And yeah, I mean, we all grew up watching, hearing Bob Cole, right? And we all have tons of memories. But I thought, great perspective by Cheech, right? Like, you got 90 years in, you got to do what you loved for a very long time. You know, we should all be so lucky to live a long, rich life the way Bob Cole did.
And, you know, that point he makes, I mean, it's somebody who's dabbled in play-by-play.
Yes.
Definitely just dabbled.
Dabbled.
Well, only dabbled.
Well, you've done a lot of soccer play-by-play, too.
But, you know, that is, I don't know if it's a learned skill or if it's just natural. I couldn't tell you if I have it. It would have to depend on how people feel the way that it sounds. But what Cheech just mentioned, you could turn away from what you're watching or be on the radio and not, and it's at times going in one ear, out the other, whatever it might be. But, and this is where, like, following the play and really understanding the ins and outs of the game, where you can see a goal developing while the puck is in the neutral zone or whatever it might be. Like, you have that anticipation and the ability to naturally bring that to life. I mean, Bob Cole had that in spades. Yeah. And he was definitely one of the best. Certainly the voice of hockey for a lot of years. One of his great quotes with Trevor Linden on the big, the perfect goal from Trevor Linden. It's up there in the Jim Robson broadcast gondola with many other big quotes from Canucks history. So we remember Bob Cole today. And there's a lot of content at sportsnet.ca about this, some of his greatest calls of all time as well. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. You're listening to Canuck Central. Coming up, we're going to get into more of the series because that's what's going on. Canucks and Nashville Predators, Game 3 is tomorrow. Adam Vingan is going to join us, Preds reporter, Sportsnet contributor on this series. That's coming up next on Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
back in on Canuck Central. It's Stan Riccio and Satyar Shah on the eve of Game 3. 24 hours from now, Game 3 will be ongoing, nearing the end of the first period, actually, as it is a 4:30 local time start for Game 3 tomorrow for the Canucks and Preds.
Yeah, it won't be a super late post game, but we're going to have an extra hour of coverage on the post game, plus a post game.
You just jinxed it. Triple overtime tomorrow.
That's fine. It's fine because we have a post game show coming up as well.
Oh, okay.
With Josh Elliott Wolf. So he can do, if they go triple overtime, yeah. Josh can stay here.
Josh will just do the whole post game show.
He can do it.
All right, quickly, before we get to our next guest, the goal horn. Couple of games on the go right now. The goal horn brought to you by Rewind Beer Co. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. Panthers with a 1-0 lead on the Lightning. Matthew Tkachuk, his second of the series. That's at the end of one period of play. And the Hurricanes have just gotten a second as they lead it 2-0 over the New York Islanders. Brent Burns, Dmitry Orlov, the goal scorers, both the Hurricanes and Panthers trying to take a commanding 3-0 series lead. All right, let's get to our next guest. He is Adam Vingan, Sportsnet contributor and one-time Predators reporter. Thanks for this, Adam. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're doing pretty well. It's been an interesting couple of games, to say the least, the way that it's played out. Fairly low events, I guess, if you're not considering the 84 shot attempts that the Canucks had in Game 2. But what have you made, at least, of how this series has played out through the first two games?
It certainly has been an interesting series. I think from a Predators perspective, perhaps they lost the game they might have deserved to win and won the game they deserved to lose. Especially considering, as you said, how many shot attempts the Canucks had and the discrepancy between the two teams in terms of shot attempts and zone time and all the important indicators that typically lead to wins. You know, the Predators held on for dear life in Game 2, but to their credit, you know, they blocked a lot of shots. I believe they were officially credited with 30 blocked shots. It certainly helped that the Canucks missed upwards of 30 shots on net, and then the chances that UC Soros did have to stop, he was able to do so, and bouncing back from a subpar Game 1. So in the postseason, we all know that no one remembers how you won the game. It's just that you won it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Predators were able to get one in Vancouver is a big deal. And you know, the Predators are happy to be home, obviously. They missed the postseason last year for the first time since 2014, and the last time they were in the postseason, they were swept by the Avalanche. The series was a bloodbath, so to speak. So Predators fans are hoping for a more entertaining, more reason to cheer at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night. But yeah, I mean, you got to give it up for the Predators, how gutsy that win was. I think Andrew Burnett said they had to be committed to the pain, is the way he described it, in terms of all of the block shots that they had to throw themselves in front of. But, you know, I think the Predators are pleased with where they are, you know, in the series coming back to Nashville.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that was different in Game 2, and you wrote a great piece about it on Sportsnet.ca about JT Miller, who was an absolute force in Game 1, not quite the same level in Game 2. Did you just kind of, you mentioned things that Nashville might be looking to do to slow him down a little bit. How did you think that went in Game 2?
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of, you know, shot attempts and such, I think they were still heavily tilted in the Canucks' favor in general. I'm not sure specifically about JT Miller, but to me, Miller has been the one player on the Canucks' side that has popped off the ice in both games. You could always feel, and even when watching on television, you could always feel when he was on the ice because something was happening. And I, as you said, in that Game 1, he was absolutely dominant. I know that Rick Tocchet said that he wasn't trying to necessarily match up Miller's line with the Predators' fourth line. It just happened that way, but it was an advantageous matchup for the Canucks. I wonder what the Predators decide to do with last change in Games 3 and 4, but you know, Miller has been outstanding in the series overall. You know, on the opposite end, and I know that this is, I'm sure, a large topic of conversation with you, you know, Elias Pettersson has had a really rough go of it, especially in game two. I mean, that chance that he had and on the power play with the wide open net that he hit off the side of the cage, if that goes in, it might be a completely different game. And I know that he also had the turnover that led to, I think, the third Nashville goal. So that's something the Predators have to be wary of. I mean, have to be wary of, you know, the likelihood of Elias Pettersson missing so many attempts over a long stretch of time is pretty slim considering his track record. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see what matchups the Predators try to take advantage of in games three and four, just because I thought the Miller line specifically feasted on the fourth line in the first two games.
Yeah, and you mentioned Pettersson at 5-on-5 in the series. Goals are 3-0 against for the Predators with Pettersson on the ice at 5-on-5. Shots are 12-4 for the Predators at 5-on-5, and the high-danger scoring chances, 7-2 in favor of the Predators with Elias Pettersson on the ice at 5-on-5. I mean, it goes without saying in almost any playoff series, your best players have to be your best players. And, you know, Nashville has started to get that out of at least Philip Forsberg in game two.
Yes, and that was an important goal in the game and an important goal for Philip Forsberg, who had an outstanding season, set the franchise record in goals at 90-plus points. You know, you could not have asked for a better season, I think, from Philip Forsberg. But, you know, the last few times the Predators have been in the postseason, he hasn't been as impactful. So the Predators had not won a playoff series since 2018. They won the first round series they played against the Colorado Avalanche before losing to the Winnipeg Jets in seven games. So since 2019, they have not won a playoff series. So this is, I think, their fifth trip to the postseason since then. And including his performance in game two, Forsberg has 8 goals and 14 points in his past 22 playoff games. By comparison, he has 42 points, 22 goals, 20 assists in his first 55 playoff games. So he has not been as productive over the past 5 years that the Predators have been in the postseason. And I think that's a reason why the Predators have not won a playoff series, is because Philip Forsberg has not risen to the occasion in ways that he has shown in the regular season and did early in his playoff career. So for him to score the goal he did, I think was important, as I said, for the Predators, but especially important for him. And he had the assist too on Beauvillier's goal, but that was just a harmless chuck in the puck towards the net. And Beauvillier made, a nice redirection there on Casey Smith. But if the Predators are to win this series, as you said, it goes without saying, they need Forsberg to play like he did in game two. The other player I'm looking for more from is Roman Josi. I feel like Roman Josi has not been effective offensively in the series. I think he might only have 2 shots on goal in this series, which is out of character for him. When this team was winning, when they had a point streak of 18 consecutive games in February and March, he was the catalyst. I mean, it would not shock me if Roman Josi ends up on some Hart Trophy ballots. I don't think he'll be a finalist, but when the results are unveiled, I would not be surprised to see him having a smattering of fourth and fifth place votes, because he played at an MVP level during that point streak. And, you know, this team needs him at his best in order to generate the kind of offense that they have shown themselves capable of doing. So I really want to see more from Roman Josi. I thought Juuse Saros had a bounce-back performance in Game 2. I thought Philip Forsberg had a bounce-back performance in Game 2. I think Roman Josi has one of his own to give. They hope it's tomorrow, obviously, but he's the one guy I'm really looking at, because that was, to me, the matchup of the series, was seeing what Quinn Hughes and Roman Josi did when they were on the ice. Yeah, and I feel like I've noticed Quinn Hughes a lot more than I did Roman Josi.
And I say even for Quinn, I think he can still be a bit better than he's been as well. But I think you're right about Roman Josi not quite being as noticeable as we saw before. One guy that I was really impressed with through the first 2 days games for the Preds was Gustav Nyquist. I don't think, you know, sometimes you may look at the point totals from the outside and think, hey, maybe just riding coattails. He does a lot good. He seems like he's got some jump back in a step as well, winning board battles, coming with pucks really well. What's making him so effective this season?
Yeah, it's a great question, because, you know, he had a career year in his mid-30s. Yeah. And I'm not sure how often that happens. I doubt it happens a lot. And I remember when the Predators signed him, in the summer, I thought, okay, he's the perfect kind of guy. He can play in your middle six, and if the team stinks, you can trade him at the deadline, because I feel like he's been traded at every deadline for the past few years. He's moved quite a bit in recent years. And he did not start the season on that top line with Forsberg and O'Reilly. I can't remember exactly when he joined them, but you know, for whatever reason, they just seemed to click. They played off each other so well. The only line in the league that scored more goals on ice 5-on-5 than the Predators' top line was the Rangers, I believe their top line, of Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere. That was the only line in the league that had more 5-on-5 on ice goals than the Predators' top line. And yeah, it just, you know, I remember 5-6 years ago, Gustav Nyquist was the player that the Predators fans wished they could trade for at the deadline when he was still on Detroit and that team wasn't playing well. It's like Gustav Nyquist in his late 20s, they would have loved. I wouldn't have expected him to continue to play like that in his mid 30s, but yeah, he's been great for them. You know, he's really added a dimension to their game, especially on that top line. And you know, he has been a surprise. I mean, he was the leading scorer in the regular season among players who started the season on a new team. The second highest scorer among players who started on the new team was Ryan O'Reilly. So they had quite an impact, and Nyquist has been a pleasant surprise.
So we've talked, I'm sure you can imagine, Adam, we've talked a ton about the adjustments the Canucks are going to make coming out of game two and finding ways to not get as many shots blocked and get more through on UC Saros. But you know, I can't get away from Andrew Brunette saying, and some of the Predators players saying, that you know, that's the way they played in the third period is not a recipe that they want to follow for the rest of the series. So what adjustments do you think Nashville is going to make moving forward in this series?
Well, today they talked about wanting to establish a better forecheck. They talked specifically about they felt like they weren't putting the puck in the right spots when they were dumping it in and allowing Casey DeSmith to get to them before they could. So that's something I think you could see. I think that's a big part of their game, and you know, having significant zone time and being able to sustain offensive zone time is something that they were definitely unable to do in game two. And I think they'd like to do that much more. You know, I think that, you know, the Predators, when they're at their best, you know, they can get up and down the ice, but they generate a lot off the cycle and the forecheck. So you haven't really seen a lot of that from them in through two games. So one thing I would be looking out for is what kind of, where they're putting the puck in when they're dumping it in, whether, you know, I feel like that's something that they specifically talked about earlier today in terms of what they would like to do better tomorrow.
Adam, we really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
There is Adam Vingan, SportsNet contributor, covering this series between the Canucks and Preds, and a longtime Predators reporter as well. It's Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canucks Central, and Canucks playoff coverage is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection at Kubota Products at one of their six locations across BC this spring. Visit DLEAMC.com. Let's get a goal horn in, hey? The Tampa Bay Lightning just getting on the board. The young Steven Stamkos still scoring big playoff goals as the Lightning needed this one, a net front goal for Steven Stamkos as he beats Oliver Ekman-Larsson to the front of the net in a battle of 91s and is able to get the tying goal. Of course, Tampa looking to get their first win of this series against the Florida Panthers team that's expected to do pretty well this playoff.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to win this one.
Yeah.
You know, you go down 3-0 against Florida, it's probably not going to work out for you. I picked an upset in this series. I picked Tampa to win.
Mm-hmm.
So I still have some hope, you know. So I'm looking at this game going, you know, they got a chance.
1-1. A road team has yet to lose in this series. So the series technically has not started until a road team.
Yes.
Has lost. A road team has won. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You know, a couple of things there from Adam. Obviously, some thoughts on the Predators. And I am curious, you know, we've been talking about the Canucks adjustments. The Preds were a team, especially during their best run of the season, where they controlled a lot of play at 5-on-5, and that hasn't really been their recipe through these first two games. The Canucks have had the better of the run of play at 5-on-5. You know, does that change here? Are there things that Nashville can do better? I'm sure, of course, but it still comes down to me as saying, well, I just think the Canucks are a better team at 5-on-5, and as long as they're doing what they're doing, like, there's only so much Nashville can do.
What's going to be key to me is the first 10 or so minutes of the game in game one. And that's where you're hoping that, you know, Nashville's probably going to have a lot of jump in front of their home crowd. They're going to be going bonkers, right? Especially after they split the first two games. And, you know, like Adam mentioned, they haven't had a lot of playoff success recently. They were swept last time. So even just getting the one win right now is really, you know, a big boost for that fan base. So they're going to be going in hyped for game three, right? So that, to me, is going to be their best chance to strike early, because that jump perhaps can be, you know, they can have it over the Canucks early on. But outside of, you know, having an adrenaline push, as long as the Canucks bring their game, they're going to tilt the ice in their favor.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, however, you can't be victimized, because you saw Forsberg victimize them, and he's good enough to do it. O'Reilly's good enough to do it.
Well, you can't give them freebies in the way that they did in game two.
No, exactly. So, I mean, as much as yes, even if you dominate, you still have to be careful to just, you know, not give those guys too many good opportunities. But I feel the same way, largely. If the Canucks play their game, this should still be fine in this series, right? And I feel like coming up to game three, a lot of things will go in their favor. They just need to get some saves early. That's kind of what it is for me. Get some saves early, get some confidence. And after that, I think if the Canucks do refine their game a little bit, and being on the road could be a positive in that aspect, I just don't see their game in terms of how they played where I have any red flags. The only red flag so far has been the Demko injury.
Just the way they've been able to execute in big moments. They were able to in game one in the third period, but game two, I think that's really what cost them big time. Big moments, they kept coming up short.
Well, obviously, Pettersson has to be better. He has to finish his chances. But to the point where I don't think it's a red flag, is if they weren't getting opportunities and the ice was being tilted in the Preds' favor, and the Canucks were the second best team consistently, I'd have far greater concerns about the rest of the series.
The Preds' best period, though, may have been the second period of game two.
They were good, man. Like, I think that's why I stopped short of saying, oh, the Canucks should have easily won that game 9 out of 10 times. Hey, the Preds did enough good things. That second, they were the better team. And the Canucks made enough mistakes and didn't take advantage of enough opportunities for you to say, hey, they deserve significantly better. And that's something to keep in mind. Like, I don't think it was a case of 60 minutes of the Canucks going at Nashville. Like, Nashville also had a punch. They completely, you know, went into a shell in the third, of course. But the second, you're right. Like, they had some good opportunities, and they certainly took the energy away from the building as well. Like, that buzz went away when they went up 2-0, then 3-0. And after that, it seemed like the Canucks didn't have that energy either, and Nashville took advantage.
One of the things that has been so integral for the Canucks' success this season is scoring the first goal. They haven't scored the first goal in these first two games. But actually, it's kind of one of the things about both of these teams. Canucks were the best in the league at scoring first. Nashville, I think, was third or fourth, scoring first over 50 times this year. So it is massive for both of these teams to get the first goal. And I wonder if you're the Canucks, are you maybe able to take advantage of how amped up Nashville players might be at the start of game three? We heard Rick Tocchet today say, you know, maybe he loves being the villain. So who's going to be that player to be the villain for the Vancouver Canucks? They haven't really had somebody step into that role. Maybe it's Nikita Zadorov. You know, he stared down the Preds bench, said somebody chirped him just before he scored in game three. In game two. So we'll see how that develops. Are you surprised at all that it doesn't appear as though the Canucks are making any lineup changes other than Tyler Myers coming back into the lineup, as in Vasily Podkolzin potentially getting in for his first playoff game?
No, because to me, the lineup changes we're talking about would be more cosmetic than actually making an appreciable change, right?
Right.
Like, it all kind of, is PDG versus Podkolzin going to make that big of a difference?
Judging by their numbers this year, no.
right? Now, yeah, maybe
both are probably playing less than 10 minutes.
You can make the case that Putkolzin, the experience will be good for him. It'd be good for him to maybe grow, and maybe there is some untapped potential that may arise in the playoffs that PDG doesn't have. And I can listen to all those things, but it's not exactly going to be the type of needle moving move that you're like, man, I can't believe they didn't do that.
Yeah.
I don't think they're at a stage yet where I think they need to do anything significantly different.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And one of the things about this series, like, you already have Nils Höglander, who's really struggled through his first couple of playoff games. Lafferty hasn't been all that good. DiGiuseppe has, you know, kind of been who he is, but nothing that has made any substantial effect on the series to this point. Still playing a bit of a role on the PK as well, which has had some success. I don't know if you're Rick Tocchet, do you want to add in another forward that potentially you may not be able to trust as a game goes on? Like, you've already shortened your bench quite a bit in the way that you've been utilizing your forward group, in that Höglander's playing less than 10 minutes. Lafferty's playing less than 10 minutes. Or can you afford to have another guy that you're really going to maybe want to limit their time 5-on-5 if, you know, they get a case of the deer in headlights sort of moment, like a player might have playing their first ever playoff game on the road?
Yeah, but at the same time, what if you put Bluger between Garland and Joshua, mm-hmm. and move Lindholm with Pedersen and Mikheyev, say?
Then that, yeah.
And
you're kind of just looking at a fourth line like, hey, you know, if I got to just, you know, shut it down and go nine forwards, then that's what's going to happen.
You go with those nine guys. Yeah. You know, maybe you throw those guys a few shifts here and there.
Yeah.
You know, Lafferty maybe takes a shift at center, but maybe you rotate. Lindholm gets an extra shift there. Maybe, you know, Miller or Pedersen kind of get an extra shift. And the fourth line guys on your wings play 7-8 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a way to do it that way. I think you can afford to do it, but that would take away something the coach has been committed to. It's having Pedersen, JT, and
Lindholm
playing on their own line down the middle. Do you need to have all three of those guys down the middle, though, against Nashville? I'm not sure you need now to win.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, it's not a benefit. It is. Like, I'm a big proponent of it. Is it going to be as necessary to against Nashville as it would be, say, against Edmonton?
Mm-hmm. Probably not, but if this is who you're committed to or how you're committed to having this team deployed, then I think that plays a big factor in the way that you go about it. This is the way you imagine is the best way to put this roster out. That's really what Rick Tocchet has told us for so long, and I'm not opposed to it because I'm just not sure I love the way that they're using Pedersen right now and having him play center with Mikheyev and Höglander. But when you're not trusting those guys so much, you're moving Pedersen to play up on the lotto line or moving him up to play here, moving him down there. I don't like this juggling. And essentially, you know, as we talked about with Cheech, you've kind of made Pedersen the third line center. And I know he's not going right now, but you still, like, you're going to need him. He is your most talented forward at the end of the day.
Now, I would say some of that is still overstated, I'd say, the third line center stuff. Because if you're going to play those three guys down the middle, then, yeah, I mean, one of them will be a third line center. But if you go by the ice time and by how much you get those guys out there, I mean,
okay,
Lindholm
but
plays 17.
If you're Andrew Brunette,
right,
who are your biggest worries right now for game planning against?
Yeah, it's probably Pedersen and the Lindholm line.
Is it? It's Miller.
Miller and the Lindholm line. But I mean, Pedersen still played more even strength minutes than Lindholm the other game.
Yeah.
Like, so my point is, I'm with you, but I don't know if he actually is, like, because their minutes are very similar. JT played 15:43 even strength, which is, you know, far and away more than both of those guys. But Pedersen was at 13:16 and Lindholm was at 12:38.
Yeah.
It's pretty close. Like, JT's number one, and then Pedersen and Lindholm are essentially 2A, 2B, kind of, when it comes to their ice time, right? 5-on-5, though, if you're not playing him with Lindholm, it's still going to be incumbent on either Mikheyev or Höglander finding some chemistry with him.
Yeah.
And that's why I think game three is going to be really big for Höglander here. You know, is that going to show enough progress for you to feel confident to keep that? Or does a coach have to break his tradition of keeping those three centers on separate lines.
This from Kirk on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. 24 goal scorer playing less than 10 minutes is tragic. If Höglander was playing well, I don't think he would be playing only 10 minutes a night.
No,
like, he earned a lot more ice time as the season went on.
Yeah, and if, honestly, if you go back and watch game one and watch Höglander's shifts, he had like it wasn't like he wasn't trying.
Yeah.
But like he didn't advance the puck very often. He got a strip from him quite a bit. Didn't come up with him along the wall. Didn't make the right decision when he had time with the puck. Hey, some deer in headlights, right? First game and all that. I didn't barely notice him in game two.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a scrum you mentioned with Lozon that he was involved with.
Early
there was a couple moments where maybe he did a little something, but he's not involved in the game, you know, and that's something that's going to have to change. And yeah, does he need to play more for this team to be good and score? Yeah. But he also have to play well enough for you to be able to be out there. And through two games so far, Höglander's really struggled.
This text, an interesting one. You know, we've talked a lot about other guys not showing out so well so far. Brock is costing himself a lot of money in his poor two games of the playoffs. It might be a bit of an overstatement. You guys put up 40 goals. That's not going away from the back of his hockey card at the end of the day.
And we're two games in. And I mean, it's not like, again, like I think he can be better and he doesn't have the most pace. Like once we get through the playoffs, guys, we can have a conversation about, okay, what do we see from these players? Mm-hmm. Do you feel confident paying this player to be here long term or not? And we can talk about all those things, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, when it comes to what you have to do right now, and how you have to get through all this right now. Like, I don't think Brock Besser has been as bad as people make it out to be either. Like, he had that chance against Soros. He scores. It's like Pettersson. He scores in that chance. You're having a different discussion about Brock Besser. But I don't know if Besser is going to have the type of pace in his game that he's going to be a huge standout guy in the playoffs. He's going to have to bury chances like the one he had on Soros. Or he gets a shot, he's got to have to bury it. But I don't know if Besser is this player who's going to have these shifts where he's going to, you know, just storm down the wing and rip a shot past a goaltender or really take the game by the scruff of its neck. Like, he's not that type of player.
Just swap 40 with 23, no? Essentially putting Pettersson with Garland and Joshua.
Sure.
It's a possibility.
But here's the thing, though. Like, you can do that. That gets Pettersson going again. But the whole point is you want to have three lines going. You want to have a push. So if you don't have that, then is Lindholm going to get going on his line by himself with Höglander?
Probably not.
Hey, maybe you want to try. Sure, go ahead. But to me, it's kind of like you're swapping deck chairs.
Yeah.
You know, like the deck's still the same. The chairs are just changing.
Yes.
You know, when you're doing that, like I don't know if anything's too different. Like you're still trying to get to a point where you have three guys going, you know?
It all comes back to the same issue that they tried to solve at the deadline but weren't able to, getting another big time forward.
Yeah.
Another big time winger that could help them, you know, spread out three different duos across three lines for this time of year. Game three tomorrow for the Canucks and Predators. We'll be on at 2:00 in the afternoon. And the official pregame show starts at 3:30. Puck drop at 4:30 for the Central Time start at 4:30. Or sorry, I guess 6:30 Central Time, 4:30 Pacific. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Let's do a goal horn before we hit the break. The Tampa Bay Lightning had taken a lead thanks to former Canuck, ex-Canuck, Tyler Mott. Sergei Bobrovsky had made a couple of big stops, keeping it at 2-1, and then the Florida Panthers come through. Local boy Sam Reinhart with his second of the playoffs coming on the power play, and the Panthers have tied it up at 2 apiece. Elsewhere, the Hurricanes still lead the Islanders 2-0. That's a quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard and the latest goal coming from the Florida Panthers. The goal horn brought to you by Rewind Beer Co. Find their Big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You're listening to Canuck Central.